Hello everyone, and thanks so much for joining us for this new episode of the Food Science Addict podcast. In this podcast, we aim at discovering food science topics for those of you who already know what food science is, and also for those of you who are not sure about it. Listen to us while we unravel the mystery and wonders of food science, from ingredients functionalities to novel technologies to novel foods and much more. This episode is sponsored by the Institute of Food Science and Technology, a professional membership body for those interested in food science technology. Stay till the end to find out more about IFST. Hello everyone, this is Vero. I just want to introduce our guest today. We have Dr. José Piornos, who is a flavor chemist and is a scientist, a researcher at the National Institute of Agronomical Research in Dijon, France. Today, he's going to talk about beer, but a lot of other things, really. Now, with no further ado, let's have a look, or better, let's listen at what he has to say about all of it. Enjoy.
Ciao, José. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So the first question is, I know you very well because you're one of my best friends, but can you tell everyone what is your background and why did you become a flavor scientist?
Well, my background, I studied chemical engineering in Spain. After that, I was working at a research center in Chile, where I was working on the functional properties of lupin seed proteins. And that's where I actually started working on food science. And after that, I was working as a research assistant, and I was really interested in food science, and I wanted to do a PhD. So I started looking up for PhD studentships, for positions in Europe, and I found the one that I ended up doing at the University of Reading, which was about the... So initially, it was about the formation of a certain group of aroma compounds in alcohol-free beers. But after the first meeting with a company that sponsored me, we realized that there was not much out there about the actual flavor compounds in the beers. So they were just like the main ones, the most important ones that were identified. But we didn't know if there were other things contributing to the flavor. So that's when the project changed a lot. And we ended up doing a project that was mostly on the identification of aroma compounds in alcohol-free beer. So that's why I became a flavor scientist. And it was by chance. But it's something that I really liked and I still like, of course, because I still work on that. And it's an area of food science that really, to me, I find it amazing how to combine chemistry and perception.
It's very creative and lets you know a little bit more about yourself too. So your PhD was on non-alcoholic beer. Can you tell us a little bit about how do you make non-alcoholic beer? Tell us simply, how does it work?
So to brew a non-alcoholic beer, we have two options, I'd say. So, and it's pretty evident. So one of them is just brewing a normal beer and removing the alcohol. You can do that by separating the alcohol by a membrane. You can use membrane technology like osmosis and things like that. You can also distill it off. And the other way is to prevent the or avoid the formation of alcohol. And you can do that by modifying the fermentation process. So actually in both processes, you will have pros and cons. And from the point of view of flavor, you will remove the alcohol, but you will also remove a lot of flavor compounds along with the alcohol. Whereas in the beers where the fermentation process has been modified, what you will have is a beer that it's closer to wort. It's actually the how we call the beer before fermentation. So in both cases, you will have issues or flaws related to flavor.
So how do you bring back the flavor when you distill the alcohol away and the flavor as well goes away? Can you introduce something?
Yeah, you can work on the alcohol fraction that you have removed, and you can separate further the aromas from that ethanolic solution. So it's doable, and it's actually done in the industry. Because it's not like you are adding external flavorings. It's something that was already in the beer. But you can also add flavorings to the beers. That's doable, yeah.
Speaking about flavor, where does the flavor of beer come from? So we always have different types of beer and they taste differently. Some of them, you know, a little bit more like coffee or wheat. Where does the flavor come from and why do different types of beer taste differently?
So it's mostly due to the ingredients we use in brewing. So traditionally we have four ingredients. So we have water, yeast, barley malt. It can also be wheat, it can also be other cereals. It's mostly barley malt. And we have hops as well. So the flavor compounds come mostly from malt. The formation of flavor compounds from barley depends on the processing conditions of the malt during brewing. And on the other side, we have the contribution of hops that provides like the typical bitter compounds in the beer, but also a lot of aroma. And regarding hops, the last years we've had a lot of IPA beers in the market that are becoming very, very popular and have this very hoppy, even citrus aroma to them.
Jose, what is the difference between IPA, ale, and lager?
Oh my God. So between ale and lager, the main difference is the type of yeast that is used for the fermentation. So in the case of lager, we use what's called bottom fermenting yeast. It's called bottom because the yeast sinks to the bottom of the fermentation tank. And in the case of ale, it's a top fermentation beer. And IPA is a type of ale. So it means Indian pale ale. And the characteristic there is that they are extra hopped. So they usually contain more hops than regular ales. This was done because, so it's called Indian pale ale. And so they were adding, so back in the days, they were adding more hops because of its antioxidant characteristics. Because they thought that they could help preserving the beers that were shipped from the UK to India.
Nice.
So that's why it's called Indian Pale Ale.
For shelf life. So, and the reason why it is so bitter is because they have a higher concentration of hops. Is that?
Yes, they are. They contain more hops, and the hops are added when in a part of the brewing process that it's called wort boiling. So the hops is literally boiled. So you will extract a lot of bitter compounds in that process.
That's very fascinating, Jose. I want to ask you another question that is mostly related to you, maybe two questions. What is your favorite beer and why?
My favorite beer? So actually, I really enjoy a good IPA. I like bitter things. I'm not a really big fan of sweet things. So I really like IPAs. Also, there are a lot, I think it's a variation of IPA that are called dry hopped beers. That means that the hops are added after the boiling. So the hops are not exposed to the boiling process. So what we get, it's a beer that is not so bitter, but we preserve the aroma compounds from the hops, evaporate. But if you add the hops after boiling, so you don't boil them, you will still get the nice hoppy and citrus aroma compounds from the hops.
That's nice how the way you tell it. And one more question, Jose, how do you evaluate and check the important compounds, the flavor compounds in beer? What type of analysis do you normally do in a lab?
So in flavor chemistry, we have several ways of analyzing the volatile compounds in beer. So we usually perform typical analytical techniques like gas chromatography, and usually if we want to identify a compound, we'll do GCMS, which is gas chromatography but with a mass spectrometry detector, and with this technique we can compare the results from our analysis with databases, and we can identify which compounds are there. But when we want to check if these compounds that we have identified actually have a smell, if they smell or not, what we do is called olfactometry, and it's also coupled to gas chromatography. So we call it GCO, so gas chromatography olfactometry. And it's a very creative idea that someone had a few decades ago. I don't know who, but he must be a genius. So it's basically a normal GC. So we inject our sample in the GC. The sample, the compounds in the sample will be separated in the column. And at the end of the column, we usually have a detector. It can be a mass spectrometry detector, as I said before, or another type, doesn't matter. But in this case, we split that flow. So half of it will go to the detector and the other half can go to our nose. And when I mean our nose, it can be, it's just a tube that you put it next to your nose and you smell what is coming out from the GC. And that's how we can correlate the results from the analytical experiments to the sensory characteristics of the compounds.
So you basically smell the compound, but then how do you know exactly what it is? Because, you know, sometimes we smell things and we know that we know where that comes from, but we just don't remember what. For example, something that smells like a banana, you know, or like apple. Until someone tells us that is the typical apple flavor, you go like, oh, yes, that is the right one. What do you do when you do not, you know, you're familiar with this type of smell, but you cannot recognize what it is? What do you do? What do you write?
So the thing with GCO is that we have, so if for the ones that have done GC before, you will know that the peaks are like just a few seconds long.
So you have to be quick.
Yes. So you have 2-3 seconds to perceive the aroma and to identify
an impression or something.
Yes, we can. You will find very weird things in a olfactometry, in the olfactometry notes that we do.
How many people do you need to take that test in order to, you know, correlate if that is the correct smell to the specific source?
So you usually need several people. So in my case, when I've done this before, we were using 4 trained people, so for assessors that were familiar with your technique and with the aromas and stuff. And then we used another 4 to confirm the presence of these compounds.
That's nice. So are you doing GCO at the moment? Are you what are you working at now? Is there anything you can say, or is it protected by confidentiality?
No, not really. So right now I'm working at a research institute in France, in Dijon, and I work on flavor science as well. But I have started a few months ago, and I still don't have a project for myself. So I'm trying to develop my future project.
What do you want to work with? What is your interest? What are you interested in?
I'm very interested on the influence of the food matrix, of how the food matrix affects the release of the aroma compounds. And because the components of a food, so it can be a protein, it can be carbohydrates, it can be fat, that affects how the volatile compounds are retained in the food. So just for a quick example, so if we have a normal yogurt and a zero fat yogurt, they usually don't taste alike. You will not retain hydrophobic aroma compounds in the same way as if you had the fat in there. So in the case, for example, of the hydrophobic aroma compounds, they will be more released in this kind of foods, and that will unbalance the final aroma. So that's why I'm very interested in the effect of matrix components on release, and also on the final effect, it's perception of flavor.
So this is going to be interesting for all of those people who want to reformulate traditional foods, if they want to reduce fat, if they want to reduce sugar, or even alternatives to meat proteins, animal proteins, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. So even also in the case of, so even the nature of the food component affects the retention of aroma compounds. So if we replace a meat protein for a plant protein, they will not have the same conformation. They will not have the same amino acid residues, and all of this will affect the retention and the release of flavor compounds.
Jose, I would talk to you for hours, but if we keep talking, we will end up with an episode that is extremely long, and maybe we can talk about novel trends in another episode if you're happy to talk to me again.
Of course, yeah. We'll be very happy to join you again in your podcast, yeah.
Before finishing and saying goodbye to everyone, I'd like to thank the Institute of Food Science and Technology for sponsoring Food Science Addict podcast. The IFST is the UK's leading professional body for those involved in all aspects of food science and technology. The IFST provides a variety of benefits as part of their membership, including free knowledge resources, topical events, and professional recognition. The IFST members are just like you. They're studying or working in areas of the food sector, in industry, education, and governmental organizations. Find out more about IFST and become a member today by heading to www.ifst.org. Thank you so much for joining us for this new episode of the Food Science Addict. If you have any questions or any doubts, do not hesitate and send an email to thefoodscienceaddict@outlook.com or send a DM to our Instagram @thefoodscienceaddict. Take care and goodbye.